So today is the 22nd of July and I'm interviewing Veronica Dunphy at Kerava Park Spirituality Centre at Burradoo. And this is a continuation of the prior oral history we did on the 18th of March. Where we left off, we were going to talk about you. So we're hitting St. Therese, you're arriving at St. Therese. So maybe just take you back to how that appointment came about, or just prior to arriving, where were you at in terms of the Sacred Heart, and what were the circumstances?
I had...
You can sit back and relax, that's fine. Or however you do it.
I had been at our college in New Zealand for a year and didn't reach the academic standard. So I was sent to Australia to do a postgraduate course in nursing, which I didn't really want to do. And I was fortunate enough to have a new provincial who allowed me to continue with what I thought, what I had prayed about and what I had really wanted to do in terms of my vows for the education of youth, which was to continue with my teacher training. And she gave me the freedom to look around and see what would be possible for me to do and what I would like to do. So I did that, and I found that I was able to go to a college that was accepted people of a certain age, and I could do my teacher training, a 4-year diploma course, and which was didn't include
I actually think you spoke about this.
Yes, didn't include exams.
Oh,
I could
yes.
do it by assessment, which suited me very well. I felt I could manage that, which I did. And I had the offer to go to Sadler just to be in the community there and see if that's where I'd like to be. And I did go for a visit and found it was very much what I felt I could manage and cope with. I was even offered to do 3 months in a classroom replacing Sister Mary Darcy. And that gave me a greater insight or a greater feeling that I could cope with primary teaching. I was confronted one day by one little student, a year one student, saying, laughing at me because I had instructed them to put their books away and take out their plasticine. And this little student stood up in front of me, laughed very loudly at me, and said, "Sister, it's not plasticine, it's plasticine," which was the first time I realized I was in Australia and not New Zealand. So I wasn't quite sure how to cope with that, but I said, "Well, I say plasticine, you say plasticine." And that was one of the few occasions that I was reminded by my language that I was a New Zealander. However, I enjoyed those 3 months. I was very nervous and afraid, but I coped quite well, I think. I went to college at the Good Samaritan Training College in Glebe and did a 4-year diploma of teaching.
What were the people like there? How did you feel?
I was extremely nervous and scared because I had not had any contact with teenagers and younger students, younger people. I was an elderly person in my 50s, and I was not an academic, so I was extremely nervous. But that was soon I was very quickly made to feel at home and was welcomed by these students that were just out of school and really young enough to be my daughters, or I was old enough to be their mother or their grandmother. And they were so lovely, it made such a difference. I was able to enter into the whole system or schedule of the college without any fear of not being part of it or not being welcome or being too old. It was a very positive experience for me because I had not had any contact or experience with young people. So that gave me a lot of confidence in dealing with even younger people. I was still very, even when I finished, I was still very conscious of the fact that year 1, 2, and 3, and 4, which I was given to teach when I finished, that they were very much more informed of, they had a really broad idea of education and knew a lot more than I thought that I knew. So I was kind of always conscious that I didn't know enough in my teaching. So I didn't go very far. I only taught for 5 or 6 years before I was offered an opportunity of a renewal of my religious life overseas. So my teaching days were short, but very enjoyable and a very good experience for me in connecting and relating to a younger generation still than what I had been at college with.
So you were saying you were at St. Therese for 5 or 6 years?
Yes.
Okay, so so how did you find, what was your experience there? Where were you at yourself when you arrived?
Well, one of the things that I found when I first went there was that I had really only just come over from New Zealand, and going to Green Valley, which was then named as or called, I had an unexplainable sense of something that I couldn't put a name to for a long time, until I realized that it was a place without a history. That it was an explainable experience in one sense, that there was no sort of beginning of it. and no history of it, that and you were just living somehow like beginning a history or beginning an era of something new for me in terms of teaching, but new in terms of experiencing a community that had no roots, that was out, not just my own religious community, but the community of the parish that we had come to. We established the school. It had only been going a little while, but the whole area had only been just developed. So it was very new. Everything was new for me in the sense of being in a parish, which I had never been in before, new in being in a classroom, which I never thought that I would ever be in. And new in a country that I had not long been in, that was vastly different in geographical sense to New Zealand, that was very compact and small and you didn't have to travel very far, whereas in Australia you seem to go for miles before you came to the next city or the next place. And all that I remember seeing on the way was gum trees or eucalyptuses, and which they called bush, which was quite strange for me because bush in New Zealand has huge big trees that have been there for centuries, centuries.
So the landscape.
The landscape was new.
Did that impact you? There's no one kicking the table, is there?
No.
Sorry, I can just hear a little. So how did the landscape impact you?
Well, it was vast and open and almost monotonous for me, because in New Zealand you can travel from the south of the North Island to the tip of the North Island, from one end of the island to the other, and it'll only take you about 6 or 8 hours, maybe a bit more. And every bend in the road offers you a new vista of scenery and contrasts. And so Australia was a little bit boring and arid, if you like, bare. The sheep were brown and sparse. You didn't see many. The ground was brown. The landscape was just vast and never-ending almost, whereas you could go from coast to coast in New Zealand in a very short time.
What did the children teach you when you were on arrival?
That's a good question. I'm not quite sure what the children taught me. I guess they taught me a wonderful spirit of survival in very different circumstances to what I had grown up in. So I was exposed to a new experience in life, in living under very different conditions to what I grew up in. And it was very enlightening and very Quite quite amazing to see the children that lived under poor circumstances. I grew up poor, but not in any way like the children grew up there in the valley, with not a lot of family support, so that they were grown up before they grew up. They were grown up early, and just had a wonderful sense of responsibility and caring for one another, because often that's all they were able to. Nobody really, there were a lot of parents who didn't care very much for them, but they grew up with a wonderful sense of living life with all its difficulties in a very positive and courageous way. So I guess I was very impressed with, and still continue to be impressed with, their loyalty, their appreciation of us as religious, and their continued sort of support of us. I don't think they'd had any experience of religious women before in their life, and I think they really did love us and appreciate us. So that sort of created a great bond in all of us, really. And to realize that 40 years or almost later, they still care about us. So it's wonderful, wonderful people.
What did you think of the housing?
Well, having grown up in a little hut that my father built out, what he cut out of the bush that he lived in for the first 2 years of their married life in a tent, cut the bush and slabbed the timber and built the little house. I guess we grew up in that. So the housing was very, while it was very poor, it wasn't very different to my lifestyle, my early lifestyle. But I admired the people that lived in those places without a lot of heating, without a lot of comfort, in the age that it was. When I grew up, it was an accepted thing. We had no heating, we had no electricity and that sort of thing. So I guess it wasn't such a shock to me that they were living in poor houses, cold and that.
What year did you arrive there?
I arrived in 71, and I went back to New Zealand I arrived in Australia in 78 and 9, and I was in Melbourne for a year, came to Sadler in that year. Went back to New Zealand in the end of 79 and spent 70 in New Zealand at the college, and came from college there, which where I wasn't accepted to continue, and came straight to Australia to and I was in Rose Bay the night the man landed on the moon. I remember sitting in the community room there watching television, and so, and then I went from there to Sadler in 71, end of 71, because I was in, yes.
And what did you think of the teaching staff? Like, what, when you first arrived, and, you know, not so much your first, what were some of those first kind of impressions?
I was a bit, I didn't have a lot of confidence in myself, and I was a bit overawed by their, but also felt very welcomed by them, but felt very inadequate and not very confident in. It was only after I went to college that I had gained a little bit of confidence, but even then I was very much aware of my limited teaching experience. People were, the teachers were very good to me, helped me, welcomed me, and I felt very much at home with them on. But didn't feel that I was at their, had the same experience. I felt very inexperienced.
Did that change for you?
Well, it changed after I had been away. I'd gone overseas. After I, in 79, when I went overseas for a renewal, 3 months renewal, and then came back to Australia in 81, I was very much more confident in myself and almost knew that I wouldn't go back to teaching. But I was still part of the community in Sadler, and I felt I had gained a lot of confidence in myself and found my place, which was not to be in the classroom. So I think a lot of things changed in that, for me, in that year, that first year. Because when I came back, my mother died. My mother had a stroke, and I spent 3 months at home nursing her with my sister. And then I went back to Canada for another year. So I came back again in 83, and I went straight to a new community, a L'Arche community, which was a community for people with a disability, mental disability. And from then I didn't go back to teaching, but I was still part of the Sadler community.
Nikki Flippo, were you?
Yes. Before I went on renewal, Sister Nikki Flippo was working, was teaching in the school, and at the same time working on a project that she really developed and went, was sent back or given the opportunity to go back to France, or go to France to develop more, and that was to work on a program that would help people with a disability to receive the sacraments. It was very difficult for Nikki while she was teaching, because it was an unheard of thing that you could teach people with a disability or help people with a disability to receive the sacraments. Parents and teachers weren't totally agreed on the fact that they knew what they were doing. But Nikki persevered in the parish, and she would go out and find the people with a disability that had been kept at home and not had any education at all, and she would bring them to the convent, which was a little bit frowned on and not totally accepted by the rest of the community. And I was very conscious of how passionate really Nikki was about this work that she was trying to develop. And I felt that at the time I really should be helping her, or could be helping her. But I'm a very slow learner, and it took me all my time to cope with preparing my own lessons. And so I wasn't able to help her. And when I finished there and was sent to my renewal in the north of Wales, and the possibility of going to a large community, I thought my only reason for doing it was that I might be able to help Nikki with the work that she was doing. But I really wanted to find out first if I could work with people with a disability. I didn't have any desire to, and somehow was a little bit unsure of my gift to be, or my ability to work with them, because I was always very aware of people that went into work that they weren't suited for and thought they were doing a great job and they really weren't suited to it. And I was very conscious that I didn't want to do that, and that I needed to have some experience with people with a disability before I could help Nikki, before I even would attempt to help her. So that was one of the reasons why I went, suggested to my provincial that I might be able to spend a few weeks in a large community, which at the time I knew very little about. But Nikki was very much more informed, in the sense that she had been to a retreat given by Jean Vanier, who was the founder of these communities. He founded them only in 64, and so they'd only been going 10 years, and they had mushroomed throughout the whole world almost in that short time. And so all I knew was that he began them in France, and the first community was in Trolley in France, north of France, and they were mostly men that were been in institutions. And my impression of it, while I hadn't been there, I'd heard people talk about it, and I wasn't very impressed with all these men, and they speak French. So when I suggested, or flippantly suggested to my provincial that I could spend 6 weeks in a large community. On one hand, it was in order to gain some experience. On the other hand, I was frustrated because all the other suggestions that I had made were refused. And I thought this one would really throw them, because it meant living outside of our own religious community. It meant living with men and women and speaking French. And I could do none of that. Didn't want to do any of that. But to my horror, my provincial threw up her arms and said, "I'm delighted. Go ahead, make your own arrangements, find out all you can, and do it." I cried all the way home from Mossman to Sadler, thinking, "I can't do this. I don't want to live with French men. I can't speak French." When I got home and told Nikki, Sister Nikki, she was over the moon. And I said, "It's all right for you, Nikki. You can speak French. I can't, and I don't want to go there." However, the whole idea mushroomed from there. Nikki had arranged for someone to meet me, have dinner with, who had been there. They arranged that I go there. It was the best place for me, that this person would welcome me with open arms. And I thought, how can they? I'm an old nun from the other side of the world that they know nothing about, and you tell me they're going to welcome me with open arms. I was scared out of my wits, and I went on renewal thinking, I don't want to do this. After my renewal, I said, let me get this last thing over with, and then I'll go home. They arranged for me to go for 6 weeks, and I thought if I lasted 6 weeks, it would be a first-class miracle. I went for 6 weeks, and I knew from the time I walked into the place that it was going to be something that would take me far beyond or anything that I had ever dreamed of. I don't know what it was, but I'm sure the Holy Spirit was leading me without any doubt into something that I had no idea I would end up spending 20 years living with people with a disability. I had 6 weeks. They asked me, did I want to stay another 6 weeks? And I said, yes. I stayed another 6 weeks, and I was totally out of my depth in knowing what was happening to me in terms of this large community which I found myself in, living with 6 men, 5 handicapped people and 2 men assistants. I wanted to get out, and I began to question where I belonged, whether I was in this secular community and didn't belong in my religious community.
Can you pull that curtain across? Looks like it's heating up for you, doesn't it?
Okay.
Sorry. Do you want to just repeat that line for me? I'm sorry. Where you were questioning where you belonged.
I was questioning where I belonged. I found myself deep within the community, the large community with people with a disability, which I didn't want to get involved in. and I couldn't work out what was happening and where I belonged. I felt I had to get out of it to look at it from another perspective or find more information about it. So I went down to New York. I was invited to a international workshop of our own religious sisters. I thought this will give me some idea as to where I really belong. I discovered that the one thing I wanted to do was to become a person of prayer and contemplation. So I went to a lesson, I went to a workshop on it, and was totally thrown by the presentation of that workshop, which disturbed me greatly, because I realized that that was not where I belonged. The 3 months or a month experience I'd had in L'Arche spoke to me so strongly that I knew that that was where I was being called to spend the rest of my life, if you like. So I was more confused than ever until I had the good fortune of meeting with 3 or 4 of our American provincials, who are very well-informed women and are very insightful and discerning. They all agreed. I couldn't believe that I was there in the presence of these wonderful women, having come from little New Zealand without much education or anything. And they were very clear about the fact that I had been called into a ministry that many of the sisters would love to be part of, but were not able to because they were caught in a system of education and didn't allow them the freedom to do what I was doing. And they said, you have been called, you have a vocation within a vocation. You've been called to be a religious of the Sacred Heart in L'Arche, which is the name of the communities, and it means in French, it's a French word for the Ark of the Covenant, the Ark where people take refuge. So I was very blessed by having such wonderful women really guide me and support me in what I had been called into against my own wish or desire. And so I went back and they said, you can stay there for the rest of the year. And I couldn't wait till I got back. And one of the convincing things for me that it was right for me was that when I rang on the phone from New York to Toronto in Canada and spoke to the director of the community, he said, when are you coming back? And I said, I can come back for the rest of the year. And he said, how wonderful. We will welcome you with open arms. I got off the phone when I finished on the phone, I could not believe how excited I was on one hand, and on the other, I could not believe that I didn't know why I wanted to go back to the snow, the slush, the men. Nothing practically drew me back there, but I was elated and I was overjoyed to the bottom of my toes. I couldn't wait to go back. So it convinced me that God was calling me back there. It wasn't anything that I personally desired to be. And for what reason, I don't know, but it was a very integrating experience for me. It incorporated all that I had longed for, in that the community, supplied, if you like, not quite the right word, but the community life gave me everything in a nutshell. It was a ministry, it was personal prayer, it was community life, it was the church prayer of the church, and community prayer. All together, without having to go anywhere. The people with a disability were the center of the community, and they were the mission or the ministry that I was being called into. And I had once longed for a place where I would be accepted just for who I was, and not for any credentials that I had. And I certainly wasn't qualified in understanding people with a disability, let alone living with them and coping with their difficulties. But I did have my nurses experience of being a trained nurse, and I also had the experience of my teacher qualifications, which I think were the groundwork or the background from which I was able to move into that kind of life and find my place, and found a great deal of freedom and ability to be with people that needed to know that they were of value. So what I had longed for was to find a value, that I was accepted for a value just in myself and not for what I could do. I also was able to live with people who had, in the eyes of society, no value. But they taught me everything that I needed to know about myself and find a value in myself. So it was a reciprocal experience of living with people that were considered to have no value in the size of the world, but had tremendous gifts to offer people of all walks of life. And I have never stopped thanking for that privilege. And I still am able to minister to people with a disability, in that I learned also to do massage, have a gift of in my hands for massage, and to this day I continue to minister to people with a disability, although I don't live with them now. I lived with them for 20 years, and that was a wonderful, wonderful gift in my life. And I've learned a lot of freedom, in that it was never easy, but they were people who didn't pull any punches, in the sense that you knew exactly where you were with them. They knew exactly what you needed to know without, so they were very honest, very transparent, very forgiving, very loving, but also very difficult. But I had wonderful, wonderful experiences.
So 20 years is a long time, isn't it?
Yes.
Were you in Canberra for 20 years?
No, I was in Canberra for 14. I was in Canada for 2 years. I was in Sydney, Burwood in Sydney, for 2.5 years. I was down the coast in Milton, in a little community there, for a year. I was in Canberra for 14 or nearly 18 years. And I still have contact. I'm still a spiritual member of the Sydney community and the Canberra community, and I contact them as often as I can, and usually when they go on a community weekend, I'm always there if possible, which is, it keeps the connection up. And yes, I've made a covenant to the poor, to the people with a disability. So it's like a sort of a double commitment, or not a double commitment, but it seals the vocation within a vocation that I have been given. And I'm very, very grateful for that gift that has given me so much and has enriched my life beyond anything I would have ever imagined. So I'm now going to spend some time in a community in Western Australia with the Aboriginal people, which I also am a bit unsure of, again, not knowing whether I can relate to Aboriginal people in the way that would be life-giving for them, or I'm not going there just to do something for them. I just want to be there to experience their culture, a little bit of their culture, and to do what I can in terms of practical things that I'm possibly is my gift.
And what might some of those practical things be? Are they the similar kind of practical things that you
One of the main things is that they've asked me, they have a project to build a garden in the three little surrounding villages, I suppose, in Geraldton, in the north of Perth. And they've not sure how they want to do that, and they thought that I might be a little bit of help to do that. I'm not sure. It's all very well to build a garden when you've got bore water and good soil and that sort of thing, but when you're in the desert with no water, I'm not sure. You know, it will be a very big learning curve for me, but that's what I'm mainly going over for, and to cook. I've been, in the last few years that I've been home here in Kerevere Park, I've done a lot of cooking in terms of Christmas cakes and made hundreds of them to sell. And so they said, and made jams and pickles and those sorts of things, marmalades and those sorts of things. So they're asking me to do that too. So I'll be cooking cakes. I believe they have a sale place where they can sell them. And they're having a fete where they, because it's all run on, they've got no money, it's just run on charities, and all the people that come there are volunteers. So I'm quite delighted to be doing something that is helping people, and at the same time learning about the people that are own the, you know, that belong to the land. And I'm also very interested in the conservation of water and ecology. So it will be a huge learning experience for me, and I hope that I will be able to give something.
How old are you now, Veronica?
86.
Healthy looking 86,
aren't you? I'm very healthy, and I'm very, very grateful, and I'm very aware that I have such good health, and I'm very conscious of how good God's been to me.
Just taking you back to Canberra, and you had some photos there. I mean, just thinking about what did you give that community that was all, and then you went to Canada for a couple of years, and you've got that document there that reflects probably you gave quite a lot there, just quickly scanning it. But what did they tell you you gave them? How did you, you know, what do you give them?
I think I just gave them a presence, and hopefully a fidelity to their a faithfulness, I suppose, in, and just the gift of myself, I guess. I don't know that I gave them anything extraordinary, but I was always there. And tried to help the people grow to their full potential.
Well, that's a pretty big job.
Well, it wasn't an easy job. It wasn't easy. And to know that they were loved and valued. Because they're so normal, you know, whatever normal might mean. Much more normal than a lot of so-called normal people. But people don't understand that and are often scared by just their physical appearance and their inability to even verbalize or say or speak. But somehow they have such a gift that you can't help but
How are you connected to Nikki today, Nikki Flipper?
Only in so far as we have a lot in common, and that she did a lot for a sister community to L'Arche, which has been is called Faith and Light, and it's an organization not as structured as L'Arche, but it's an organization that works with the parents of people with a disability and brings groups of parents with their sons or daughters together on a regular basis and forms a community that way without living together. And they have fun and they have prayer and that sort of, but it forms a little community like that. And there's a lot of those all over the country. And Nikki was very involved in that. And I was, while I was living in Sydney, and would go every Easter on a pilgrimage, which was really wonderful. Had spent many Easters with Faith and Light groups where they would just go somewhere and spend Easter together and go through all the ceremonies in a very simple way. They have a great gift for acting and, you know, miming and doing things. And the people that work with them are very often very gifted in that sense, that they can bring out those gifts in them. And many of the Easters that I was part of during that time were just so inspiring, just so meaningful for me as well as, and it helped what Nikki had tried to do in terms of helping the people understand their faith. And but really they teach us, we don't, you know, they have such a clear, and they're so, there's no guile in them, and they're so honest and, you know, transparent in a sense in terms of their faith. And it's just beautiful sometimes to hear them pray. We have prayer every night in the communities, and they just say, you know, without any fear or inhibitions or anything, and they, you know, can express themselves in so many ways, not even speaking, but they know what they're doing. They know somehow God is there in their life. It's a very wonderful experience, but you've got to be open to that too. Some people can come and the people will know immediately that they're not genuine. They're coming there to help them and think that they can do something for them. And they know immediately.
So just changing tact a bit, there's quite a few photos there of you up in the air. So what's the attraction there? When did that start?
Well, I just love life and love, just love life and like doing, not daring things, but love exciting things. The first thing I think I did, I was very tired, and there was a friend that had come and spent some time in Canada with me, and she was living in Canberra, and I met her one day in the car park, and she said, "Oh, look," she said, "I'm just so flat." She said, "I want to do something really exciting." She said, I'm going to go and go down the Murrumbidgee River, and in a floating boat." She said, "You want to come?" I said, "Oh, I'd love to." And we went down this raft, floating raft thing, down white water. I can't swim. And there was another girl who said, oh, yes, I'd love to come too. So, I mean, a girl, I was old, and the three of us went down this in this raft, down white water rafting. And I said, when I got into the boat, I can't swim. The fellow said, oh, well, we'll put the seatbelt on you, or the lifebelt on you. And we had the weekend down the river. We parked, spent the night on the side of the river. And these fellows, there was a lot of men in it, again. And
they are around, aren't
they? They're always around, somehow. I've had lots of fun. And I suppose I'm very lucky that I grew up with brothers. You know, I had three brothers. So it wasn't a great thing for me. I didn't have any hang-ups about them in that sense. I'd lived life, I'd been a nurse, and so, you know, and you live on a farm and you see life in the raw. So,
sorry, we're just getting back to that.
Yes.
Where you were.
So we were down the river in this, and men couldn't understand these two young women with this older woman, you know, on this weekend. But it was fun, and they tipped me out, they put the life belt on and put me out into the river, you know, and I can't swim, but they put me out there, and it wasn't very rough. But, you know, going down the rapids or the white water was a bit scary, but I hung on and I enjoyed it. It was just beautiful to see, even to see the men, these elder, you know, different ages, they weren't young men, but they were middle-aged, to experiencing and enjoying the peace of the quiet water and the stillness of everything, just floating down the river. It was really wonderful. I just did enjoy it. And when I was 75, my friends, I've always liked driving, and I drive rather fast. I've had several speeding.
Have you ever lost your license?
No, I never lost my license, thank goodness. And
did you ever pull the nun card on them?
Yes, once. I was still hadn't in my habit, and it was in New Zealand. I was driving a combi van from the college and going back to Remuera, and I had the director the director sitting next to me, and we were going down this avenue, and I saw this man standing out on the side of the road, and I said to her, what's he doing out there? Is he standing out there in the middle of the road for? And she said quietly to me, I think he wants you to pull over. So I pulled over and I had my veil on. And he said, just because you have a veil on or something, don't think that you are exempt from the rules of the road. I said, well, God, I'm in a hurry, I'm going to a lecture. And he said, that doesn't excuse you. You're exceeding the speed limit. So I said, I'm sorry, I didn't realise I was going that fast. And he said, well, that's a caution. I don't want to do anything more. The next time I was speeding, I had my veil on the seat beside me. And he... And he said, you realise, again, he was standing out in the middle, and I thought, oh, what's he want me to do this time? I thought, now, I was travelling from Dubbo, and I thought, I haven't seen any accident. He's probably wanting me to find out if I've seen an accident. And I thought, no, I haven't seen anything. He pulled over. He said, you realise you're exceeding the speed limit? This is a 60 zone. I said, I've just I just pulled out of the petrol station up there. I said, I just came out. He said, I don't care where you've come from. He said, this is a 60. I said, I couldn't be going that fast. I've just come out of the petrol station. He said, could I see your license, please? And then he said, well, I'm sorry, but you've been already booked, so I can't take this back, because he realised I was that Sister Veronica, I suppose, on the my licence.
So, when was your last fine, just out of interest? Oh, because you know my father was a policeman.
Yeah, I know. It was he that got me off that one. He said, I won't do that, don't do that again. I won't be able to do that again. He got into trouble, I think.
He used to say that about us when we had to. He said, don't, just because I'm your father, you have to handle that yourself.
The last one?
Yeah.
Oh, the last one was just recently. I was in Canberra. And it was a... I had one in November of last year. I went to Mary Darcy's funeral. And I was going to Wollongong. And there's a little stretch of the Princess Highway between the end of the Bulleye Pass and when you get into Wollongong. And I didn't know there was a... Or it was a 60 zone, I think. And there was a speed camera there. And it had caught me at 67, I think, or 60... 70 or something. Anyway, when it came, I said, well, it couldn't be me. I said, I wasn't there. And Betty heard me, and I nearly got a friend of mine who picked up my car from the funeral and drove home. I said, that must have been Lizanne. She had my car. I wasn't there. Betty heard me and she said, beg your pardon, where did you say it was? And I said, on the Princess Highway. It says on the Princess Highway. I said, I wasn't on the Princess Highway. And she said, well, Lizanne didn't go back that way. She said, whereabouts? And I said, oh, I don't know. There's no Princess Highway as you go into Wollongong. She said, yes, there is. I've been caught there.
She's from there. She'd know.
Yes, she knew. She said, I've been caught by that one. Anyway, that was all right. That was not very big. It was
$375.
No, it was $60. $80, I think.
They hurt, though.
They did. Then, beginning of this year, I went to Canberra for a few days. At the end of the year, between Christmas and New Year, I was offered to mind Lizanne's house in Gungahlin in Canberra. And I was being very careful because Canberra is very doubles the amount that you get. So I was very aware of the limits,
rules.
The rules. And I had gone over to a friend in Moniassa, and then I was going over to tea with another friend in Queen Bian. And it was on the Manara Highway. Anyway, I didn't know what I was. I wasn't travelling very fast. I wasn't going over what I thought was the speed limit. Anyway, not long afterwards, somewhere around March or somewhere, I got a phone call from the provincial office to say, was I the driver of a car? Certain number plate. And I said, oh, it'd have to be. There's nobody else driving it. She said, well, we've received an infringement from the RTA, and it's rather large amount. And I said, oh, she said, were you the driver? And I said, well, yes, nobody else would have driving that car. I said, I was in Canberra. She said it was on the Manara Highway. And she said, I'll fax it through to you, and if you will just initial it or sign it saying that you were the driver. I said, okay. So she faxed it through to me, And when I got the fax, I nearly died. I sat there and I called Joy and I said, would you listen to this? I read it out. $650. I said, Joy, how can I pay it? I can't pay that. $650. I said, there must be some mistake. Anyway, I signed it. I thought, oh, God, how am I going to, where can I find $600? I signed the thing and sent it back. And anyway, I didn't hear anything about it. I thought, oh, I sweated over it, told Betty. I said, how am I going to spend $650? Anyway, eventually a note came from the RTA from Canberra. And I sat there with the envelope. I couldn't open it. I said to Joy, oh, God, here it is. I opened it, and it was had been reduced to $175. So I thought, oh, what the? So I rang the provincial office and spoke to the person, and she said, oh, well, that would be right. She said, apparently, if you were driving, that's what they would charge if you were driving a company car, because this is a fleet car. We have a fleet of cars. And they thought that I was driving a company car. So she said, that's what happens when somebody's driving a company car. They get booked for double the amount. But $600, I could have died, really. I didn't know what I was going to come up again. And I was only doing 9 Ks over the limit. 9 Ks over the limit. I was doing 89, was in an 80K zone. Whew. So
just talking, I just want to ask you, we might
find that down, yeah.
I like that. So be careful. Don't be away.
Yes, I probably won't be driving. But
probably not a good idea.
No.
there's some photos there of you up in the air. Like, what? Was that a particular event?
That was, again...
Was that a world championship?
No. For my 75th birthday, my friends in Canberra were great friends. They were just... They're wonderful. Supported me in everything that happened to me and just were lots of fun. So they gave me a balloon flight over Canberra. So that was good. And then, because they knew I loved driving and did often exceed the speed limit, for my 80th birthday, I had a big party here, invited all my Lash friends. I had about 80 or 100 people. And my friends in Canberra gave me a ticket or a sponsored me or paid for me to do 6 laps around the Wakefield racecourse.
In a what?
In a V8 race car.
You were driving.
I drove it myself. And I have some photos of it. And afterwards we had champagne breakfast, and that was fun.
Like you didn't have it before.
Oh, it would have probably been better. I was escorted around, and it wasn't very good. I mean, I felt I couldn't go very fast. So I drove home faster than I drove around the racecourse. But it was fun getting into the car. They had to pack me up. There's no doors. You climb in. You just sort of get in the side of it. And it's just all tin, you know, it's just all, there's no padding or anything. So they put me on a cushion, and sat me up, and away I went. But it was fun. It was fun getting dressed up and having everything and doing it myself. I didn't have a driver beside me, but had a car in front of me, which wasn't very helpful. So that was my 80th birthday. And then I went on a holiday, and I thought, I'll do something this time that I've always wanted to do, and that was to hand glide. So I got the opportunity when I was on holiday in the South Island at Queenstown, and I had the opportunity to hand glide. So up I went on the Miraculous in the Queenstown, South Island of New Zealand, and hand glided down the mountain. It was exciting. It was absolutely exciting. Nobody else wanted to go. I was in a group, a tour group, and all the men said when I got back, "Did you say your Hail Marys?" I said, "No, I was
on
eagle wings. I was on eagle's wings. God was with me. It was exhilarating. Just gliding through the air with no motor and no power and no, but just depending on the wind. This was just beautiful, just beautiful."
So we're going to come to an end.
Yes.
So what is there anything that you'd like to not an end literally, because I'll follow you around in a few months somewhere. Is there anything you need to say? I know there's a lot to say, but
Yes, I suppose there's a lot to say. I just give thanks for the life that I've been able to live and the experiences that I've had through my life and the opportunities that I've been given, particularly the opportunity to be allowed to take a step in the dark, I suppose, and discover a vocation within a vocation that I never dreamed that I had. So I suppose I'm just grateful, and yes.
From what I hear, the journey started, I don't want to make this to be the fact, but it's from what I've heard you speak about, it's like your life opened up from that point.
Yes.
At the beginning of Green Valley, maybe, or there's still some shift with your studies, and then what evolved.
Yes, yes.
And it's kind of been opening.
Opened out completely.
For you ever since? Or?
Yes, yes, there's been.
Is that right, or is there some.
No, I think that's right. I suppose.
As a person.
Yes. And as a child, I felt I grew up in without too many restrictions, in a freedom, sort of free of inhibition, you know, free of restrictions in a formal, in terms of a formal education and a formal lifestyle. We were free. And I suppose, you know, it closed a little bit when I entered. And then when we came out of enclosure, I came out of enclosure, and my life has gone complete circle, I think. In that sense that, you know, when I entered, it was to be a contemplative religious, and that was it. I didn't want a career. I didn't want to teach. I didn't want a nurse. But I ended up doing all of those things. So, yes, I guess it has opened and blossomed and given me fullness of life in every sense of the word, mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually.
Yes, God seems to do for us what we can't do.
Well, he does, and I think that's being open to the Spirit. You know, if you're open to the Spirit and allow God to lead you where you're not sure about going, great things happen, you know, wonderful things happen. And I just feel I've been blessed, really blessed. God has led me down paths that I would never have dreamed of venturing or going or being possible to go. So I give thanks for that, and I give thanks for the opportunity to share it, share my life with so many people. I discover, somebody said to me the other day, you seem to have a lot of friends. And yes, I have. And I'm very grateful to them. I often think, well, I don't know what they see.
Sometimes we don't need to know what
they see. No, and that's good. Yes, it is good.
It's hard, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
I think, oh, what do they see? And then it's not for me to worry.
No, it isn't. And once you start thinking about it, you ruin the sense or ruin whatever might be there. But it's been good. It's been good. I've had a good life.
You're having a good life.
And I'm still continuing to have a good life and explore. And somebody said to me the other day, why would you want to go and be on a learning curve at your age? I said, why not? Why not? If you've got the health and the energy, which I have, which is God-given. I don't pretend to think that I do anything to, you know, increase my energy. It's just there, and I've been grateful for it ever since I was a little kid. So thank you Therese, for allowing me to share that, or giving me the opportunity to share it, whatever.